Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to take to the road as we chase after the people riding the e-bike revolution, those driving it, those just riding along. And today we're going to ride along in a very special story, a very special journey here. I hope we can tell it in its entirety here. I hope I can do it justice, because I think it's an amazing story, what little I've heard. Having teased it enough here, let's bring in our guest, Ryan. Is it Gustman? Ryan Gustman.
Yes.
And you purchased your bike, just so we're clear, down in Piedmont, the Piedmont Triad store, the Pedego Piedmont Triad store in that triangle area there, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a place I visited, very beautiful part of the South down there.
Oh, yes. I bought it last year, the City Commuter Platinum Edition, Black Edition, whichever one you want to call it. I definitely made that move, and I've loved it since. I've had a few issues, but nothing too bad.
Is this somewhere, they call it a triad because there's a bunch of cities. There's like Winston-Salem. Is it Charlotte near there and stuff too? Or that kind of?
Charlotte's a little south. Yeah. It's hard to explain. It's one of those, it's a triangle because of.
That's the one I was thinking, Raleigh. Raleigh-Durham is another kind of Raleigh-Durham,
yeah,
Charlotte.
That's
right.
A different one.
Well, anyway, there's a combination of cities there, and they go back a long time. And I would think that area has changed a great deal over time here. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I wonder if there's some of these rails to trails and all these other things going on down there, because it's an area that goes way back into colonial times, I would think. So anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about, though, the beauty of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. We're here to talk about the beauty of your story here. Your background is as a photographer. In your 30s, I'm told, and you're self-taught. You really have specialized in a particular type of photography that I guess you exhibit or sell. Before we reveal what it is, do you make a living as a photographer? Is this a passion or is this a profession?
Yes and no. I do it professionally. I do try to make a living off of it. I do have a regular job working for IT at a hospital. But
okay.
Aside from that, I do have a studio downtown, and I do sell, and I'm trying to do books and a few other things. Professionally, I am trying to move into that.
Well, I would think you create some beautiful pictorial books because you specialize in capturing abandoned buildings. What a unique thing. These are old, what, dilapidated buildings? And somehow you find beauty or interest in these buildings that are falling apart or falling down?
For me, there's just some draw there, a sense of liminality of what was there.
Yeah.
How it felt to be the workers there. That time, that capsule of time from like the 1970s, the 1980s, how it felt to be a worker there. And you experience these places pretty much frozen in time, and there's just something in me that I want to capture that. I want you to feel that in the pictures I capture, and capturing that before they get remodeled or demolished or
right.
change out.
Right. Or just fall apart and decay and go back into the earth. You use a word that I don't hear very often. It's one of my favorite words in the English language, liminal, this idea of transitional. You know, you go from being a boy to a man. You go from point A to point B. There's some transition period, and it's a finite kind of period of time there, and something changes, right? There's a transition from one phase to another here. So you're watching these businesses transition from, they were something, they were vibrant, they were alive, and now they're abandoned.
With the liminality, people don't stop to realize those points of progress. They want to watch either the beginning or the end, and it's one of those flows where I just really love to experience seeing these places just in a way that you do not get to see, not even in museums, because I mean it's real unsafe in those places.
Yeah, I'll bet. So again, just fascinating topic here. Beautiful area down there. I bet there's a lot of buildings in transition that have been there for 100 years or whatever. The city moved on, the factory moved on, and now they're left behind. And then in some places they find these ways and repurpose them and rebuild them and turn an old cotton warehouse into a new cool restaurant or something here eventually. Although some never find any of that. They just decay and dissolve and go away. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, all of that, everybody's saying, what the heck does this have to do with riding a bike? Because on top of this, talk about the, shall we call it a disability? Will you describe it? A disorder? Or you suffer from autism?
Suffer might be a loaded word there.
Yeah, maybe.
I try.
trying not to put any loaded adjectives on here, but we hear the word autism and we go, oh, you know.
That's fair. It's one of those unknowing types of things. The regular neurotypical experience, you're not able to comprehend it. Basically, your sensory inputs are on pretty much fire all the time. Possible sensory input is going constantly. It's like one of those things where you hear a noise, you adjust to it, but we don't stop hearing that noise. That noise is consistently in our brain, aware of it, doesn't go away until we address the problem. Or like fluorescent lights, they're just extremely loud. It sounds weird to regular people, but I swear they're loud, I promise.
And for what a little I know of autism, it's a spectrum, so it's not just one thing. They analyze you, how much, how little have you got of this sensory overload, and it can lead to shutdown. I mean, it's just, I can't take it. I can't process all this stuff. It's too loud. It's too bright. It's too much. It's too fast. I can't handle this, right?
Yeah, that's a big problem, especially with males. A lot of men will hit that barrier, and then they'll just get told to man up and deal with it when you literally are crashing and burning at this point where you just need to get away.
Right.
And finding employers or people who understand that it's getting easier. Growing up in the 90s in the public school system made things a little rough.
Yeah,
I won't go into too much detail.
Because nobody knew what it was and how to explain it. What do you mean? What do you mean that fluorescent bulb's loud? Just sit down and, you know, come on.
Yeah, and there has been a little bit of a shift. I'd say more than a little bit. We are addressing that, and more than just autism, other sensory issues where we're like, oh, it may be more than just them not being able to. They're basically doing it for attention, that type of stuff. It's something actually more than that.
Right.
And it has been a struggle, and learning to cope and manage these things is something I had to learn myself.
Right. It's a journey that you're on here. So you got this passion to go photograph buildings in transition, abandoned now. Maybe they'll dissolve and disappear. Maybe somebody will find them and resuscitate them and bring them back to life. But you find them in that transitional, that liminal moment here between what they were and what they will be. And I don't know, maybe there's some, why are you interested in that? Why is it, is there comfort in that? Is there less sensory input because it's sort of in a static state here? I don't know.
I do believe that static space does draw me to that. There's also that sense of experiencing a space you just do not get to see. There's a feeling, it's kind of like an energy, an aura, when you're in these places that just grounds you. It is static, and you're able to focus on everything. You can see the paint chipping off the wall. You can see the clock that stopped at 10:27 30 years ago.
Right.
You can see a calendar from 1978 where the last day of the factory was marked on there. Papers on a desk that have been sitting there for 40, 50 years. And you observe this and see that this was important. These things were somebody's job, somebody's life, and it's just locked in time now. And there's just that draw to it.
So what drew you then? You used a car to get to work, to get around, to go off the beaten path, to go find these abandoned buildings and down in some funky part of town or way off in the outer part where the plants have grown up and the town has died. I don't know where all these abandoned buildings are, but I picture them in remote, hard to get to places. And you suddenly decided, I'm going to do something I've never heard of. I'm going to sell my car to purchase an e-bike. Talk about that.
So I came to the realization that my commute, my day-to-day life, I was barely getting out of town, maybe 6 to 10 miles a day, maybe 15. And I was hearing about e-bikes for a little while, and I decided to look into it 3 or 4 years ago, and the technology wasn't quite where I wanted it. And then last year, it kind of came up, and I was looking for brands that were reliable and basically a dealership type of deal where if I were to replace my car, I could have a very nice e-bike and have backup in case of it breaking, not through a third party, but through like a primary.
Like a car, a dealer. You thought you're looking for that same experience. I don't want to just arrive in a box and then I'm on my own.
Yeah, that I feel like that's part of the barrier to e-bikes is there's a lot of options out there. And it's really cool if you're able to investigate that, understand the technical terms right. and all that
handle
fun
it
stuff.
Fix it, do all the other things you might have to do over time, but it's not the typical transportation model. We grew up with cars and car dealers, and yet as we transition to e-bikes, we're doing it otherwise.
Yeah, and it's completely fair and legitimate. The lame, this might be a loaded term, but the layman, the average person, may not have time to do that. And the average person doesn't. And usually they have a
or knowledge or desire or whatever. In it. Anyway, just go fix the darn thing. That's what we're going to focus on for the rest of the show, this journey. And there's two parts of the journey. You taking an e-bike into these remote, obscure places, rundown parts of town, places on the outskirts of town, places that otherwise people aren't seeing. Let's start with that. Does e-bike help you get in to these places in a way a car wouldn't? I'm from Detroit, and if you went down and looked at some of these rundown abandoned factories, I don't know if you could drive up to them anymore. The roads are all potholes, the buildings falling down. I certainly can't get into the complex and go there. I got to stop and walk in at some point in time. Does the e-bike help you go places you otherwise wouldn't go?
Well, I just want to say this isn't official advice on how to take pictures of abandoned buildings.
Okay.
No legal.
You're the expert. I've never known anybody that did this, so you're instantly the expert, right?
It has helped. It's one of those things where it minimizes your footprint. You're able to get in and out faster. It is something you do worry about, but also if you have it chained up and you have it hidden away, it's nothing too major.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I mean, even when I'm taking it to my regular hospital job up the road, it's just the same as that. You're just parking it somewhere and it'll hopefully be there when you get back.
And so what was the motivation? I'm looking at the information you sent, and part of it was to do good, to, you know, have less of a footprint and less pollution stuff, but it must be more than that. I mean, because you have a special need. You have a special desire, and the majority, I'll kind of preface this. Here's my wonder. We've had lots of people come on the show and they say, I got out of the car because I wanted to sense things more. I want to feel the wind in my face. I want to feel the sunshine. I want to hear the birds. I want to experience more than I get sitting in that controlled climate. And yet you've got autism. So I would think it would be the opposite. You'd like to be in the controlled box where you can control your inputs, not out in the open where it's all around you. You're getting a lot of sensory input. That's what surprised me.
The funniest thing is I actually got overwhelmed more in the car.
Really?
And I don't know why. It was any kind of sensory input at all that hit me in the car would just make me anxious. It would just get me out of it.
Sound of the air conditioner, the window going up and down or something, some mechanical sound or whatever, I suppose.
Exactly, exactly. And then when I got onto the e-bike and tried that, it was a more visceral, grounding experience. There were a lot more sensory inputs, but those sensory inputs matched what was going on. It wasn't overwhelming like it would be in a car where you are in a neutral state constantly because that cabin's pretty quiet,
yeah.
Depending on the car, of course.
Right.
But any kind of sound that gets in that car just knocks you out of it as opposed to your regular status quo, the baseline on the e-bike.
And I suppose you find yourself saying, what's that sound? In a car, I guess I'm used to hearing, but there's lots of weird sounds. And sometimes I think, what is that? What's that noise? I'm always trying to think my car is going to break down or something. What's it making a weird noise? But when I'm walking, I hear lots of noises. But somehow, I guess what you're saying is I expect that they're natural. They fit the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that baseline. People don't stop to take the regular sounds in as much.
No, we try and get rid of the regular sounds. My favorite line was my daughter's now 30, but when she was 15, I'd take her out in the backyard. We live next to a nature preserve. And I'd say, close your eyes. I said, put down the tablet, put down the phone, put down all the stuff here. What do you hear? Nothing, Dad. Exactly. And I said, really? Nothing? You don't hear that bird? You don't hear the chipmunk scream? Well, yeah, I guess I do if you make me think about it. But she needed constant sensory overload. She had to have her phone and her TV and her music blaring and, you know, as much sensory. To me, it was overload. And then she's playing a video game visually on top of this, you know. It was like, I couldn't stand that much. I'm not autistic, but even that overwhelmed me here. So maybe there's something about natural order, natural sounds that's more soothing. Do you find that helpful?
Yes. As you can see in the background here, I do play a lot of video games as well. But I have noticed those natural sounds help take me away from that overstimulation. And I didn't realize it until I was in my later 20s how much overstimulation was contributing to my anxiety and just lack of attention.
Yeah.
And moving off of that is, how do I say this? Very hard. Oh. Because we're ingrained.
We're noise junkies or whatever. We've got constant stimulation, you know, all around us, everything. Video games, I find overstimulating. I'm of a certain age. I'm a man of a certain age. I'm an aging baby boomer. Just they move so quickly. My eye can't follow all this. It's not comforting. It's discomforting. It's jarring. Everything's moving so quickly here. So I wonder, again, when they told me this story, I said, I don't know how to approach this other than to just ask, give us a definition, just a real quick thumbnail. What, for those that don't know, we've all heard the term, but I'm not sure we really know. Is it just kind of a sensory overload issue? Is that a fair way to describe autism? It's a spectrum, I know, so you can have a little for a lot of it. Yeah,
that would be the general gist of it. Basically, just constantly feeling all sensory inputs more than a regular person would. Not that we know what a regular person feels.
Yeah, right.
Or regular. A regular even is.
Right, regular. That word is so regular. There's only two of us. There's regular and irregular, you know. I've got regular bowel movements or irregular bowel movements. I don't know, one of the two here.
Who's the weird one here? Nobody knows.
Yeah. Is this regular? I don't know. This is. Well, I think. I think this is a really amazing story because not only of what you do with your passion and your profession, going out into obscure places and taking pictures of books, and I guess you turn them into what, coffee table books or prints and other things, and people put them up on the walls. Is that what people do with these dramatic pictures that you take?
A lot of my work ends up on like big metal prints for either corporate or personal clients. I am working towards making coffee table books and an actual, not quite an autobiography, but like basically talking about going into the places, how it feels being the places, the history of those places. Mm-hmm. And we got to figure out a medium for that because
yeah.
Coffee table book might work, but a regular book might work too.
Yeah, I don't know. It's or whatever, an ebook or something. I don't know. You've got to find a way to capture these stories. You're capturing a moment in time between what it was and what it might be. And what it might be is nothing. It might just dissolve into the earth and disappear again, break down. Or it might get resuscitated and turn into something. But it's a fascinating moment to capture that there. And I wonder, again, on top of this unique thing you do, you're doing it in a unique way, riding an e-bike. Well, how many miles do you travel on the e-bike? Is it all still within that 6-10 mile radius, or has it expanded your radius? Do you go farther now?
Every day to try to do at least 20 miles just to ride, just in general.
Wow.
It doesn't have to be anywhere. It can be riding around in circles downtown. I'm literally known downtown as that guy just on his e-bike running in circles. I don't care.
Looking for abandoned buildings. I don't know what he's doing again here. Yeah.
Well, I've also found doing that has made me more connected, not just on a personal level, but socially. I see regular people. I can approach them, talk to them, and just have a social experience that you just don't get in a car. No. You can't stop and be like, hey, how you doing?
Hey, wait, but you pull up immediately. If they think you're going to abduct them or something, you pull over quickly and jump out of the car. Hey, I saw you over here, Joe. Get away from me. What are you doing? But a bike is at a slower pace, and it's a more human pace. You can just put your foot down and take a pause and say, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, I've noticed with the routines I've done, I don't even have to text or call the people I regularly talk to because I run into them in town so much.
Into them. Oh, my goodness. This is like I'm going back to Andy Griffith's show in Mount Airy or whatever, in Mayberry. People just stop them. Hey, Floyd, how you doing? In the barber shop here.
Yeah, well, Winston Salem's just small enough that it can pull that off. It's kind of big, but just small enough that you'll see people very frequently.
Yeah. Well, so you, not in addition to doing the work that you do, but I'm told that you take on the role of advocating for autism, speaking about it a lot. Talk about that a little bit. And how do you explain to people the place of this e-bike in your autistic life?
So one of my big things is growing up, I didn't have pretty much any role models, and they were all for kids and nothing really developed. So when I grew up, I
no
really
autistic
wanted
superheroes that you can look up to. And
not particularly. And it's one of those things, there's just no representation, and there's still kind of a lack of representation. If there is, it's kind of shoehorned in a way that makes you be like, you're just doing that just to
Just to stick one in, right? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to do more with adults, with teens, with kids, but specifically adults, just being able to communicate, go around and say, hey, this is what's worked for me. This is what's helped. Instead of talking to their mom or their parents, which most autism advocacy things do, I just like talking directly with the person on the spectrum. And humans in general are a stubborn bunch, but autistic people are a lot more stubborn than usual.
Okay.
So explaining those types of things to people, they might not want to hear it at the time, but they take that into consideration down the line. And I'm able to show them, I went from working retail to working at a enterprise, a worldwide known hospital, Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center here at Winston-Salem, working IT by doing these types of things. And this might help you. Of course, it's my experience, but these things helped me. And I've also noticed with the e-bike that my sensory overload is regressed because I get to experience that baseline at a consistent level with the e-bike. So when I'm going in, I'm not listening to a loud radio station. I'm not listening to loud music.
That's true.
I know we're on a radio station right now. I'm not talking bad about it.
Go ahead. Go bash radio stations. That's okay. I can take it. But we're trying to be soft here. We're not blaring anything in the background.
Yes, yes.
I think there's something to that. So we've had other people come on and say, this bike changed my life. And I go, really? Okay, so you lost some weight or you got out again or no, all sorts of dramatic stories of how people really say it saved my life. It changed my life. It had a dramatic effect on my life. Am I overstating this? Has this e-bike had a dramatic effect on your life?
I would say you're not overstating it. I have had, on top of the weight loss, on top of the nice leg muscles I've gotten, more nice leg muscles.
Getting out.
I try to work out in general.
Right.
The experiences, the social experiences, the business opportunities I've gotten from just stopping and seeing, hey, somebody's remodeling that building I went into. This is the only time they're going to be here. Let me randomly approach them, making those kind of connections, just seeing regular people out there, seeing the mayor, seeing just people, making those connections.
And it really has had some therapeutic benefit. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I'm hearing you say that your anxiety, your sensory overload has been calmed a bit here.
Yeah. So that e-bike has helped a lot. And I think it has a lot to do with just how you're transporting yourself. You just don't realize either you're at home or in a car these days or in a cubicle at work.
Yeah.
And people don't get out of that.
Boy, amen. That makes me feel a little anxious and nervous just to sit, because you're isolated, you're separated from everything. And it's like being in a bubble or a space capsule or something here.
Mm-hmm. That's part of why I try to do so much downtown and stay out, not to talk bad about the suburbs, but I try to move into places where there are people, there's activity, you can see what's happening, you can see your tax dollars at work making these parks and these roads, getting out instead of thinking, why is my bubble not changing?
Like, yeah, well, I grew up in the world of bubbles. I was born in the era of suburbs and television and isolation of the first steps of we're going to control our environment. We're going to control our businesses and our buildings and everything. We're going to control the environment around us. We're going to landscape perfectly. And it becomes so fake and plastic and unreal that I think been a certain revolt against it. People want to go back downtowns and revive downtowns again. They want to get out and get out of the car and feel the wind and hear the breeze and hear the people talking around them. They want to move at a slower pace. I think that's part of this slow food movement. Everybody's cooking slower, making a cocktail for 20 minutes instead of 20 seconds. You know, there's something about the experience of doing these things that we've sort of forgotten about. And I think an e-bike taps into that. Maybe I'm making this too romantic, but I think it's part of a whole movement to slow down and smell the roses along the way here.
Well, I mean, even with the abandoned building stuff, that feeling of stopping and observing, it ties into you cannot control everything. Making everything a curated experience will come at the detriment of your mental health down the road. Even if it's not you curating it, you need to get out and experience things outside of that bubble. And e-bikes help a lot.
Amen. We just had on one of our other shows this morning a professor here at the University of California, Irvine, where we're broadcasting from, and his specialty is behavior in the brain. And he was mainly on talking about Alzheimer's and decline of memory and decline of brain function. And he said, just the biggest secret is get out and enjoy life. The richer your experience, the more you're making connection, the more the synapses are sparking. You know, the more you're isolated and alone, like when you get older, then your brain starts to shut down. You're not making as many connections. Maybe the same true with an e-bike. You're making more connections as you get out in the community here.
It's definitely aligned with that, I think, personally. You just end up getting out there and running into things, which you wouldn't do. Well, hopefully you're definitely not doing it in a car, because if you're running into things, you got bigger problems.
Yeah, you're causing bigger damage than that, literally. Well, I applaud you for what you're doing. What a beautiful project to capture these buildings in that transitional liminal state here. I'd love to see some of your work. I hope you send us some pictures of it. We'll put them in the podcast to notes here. And I'm fascinated by, I don't even know how to wrap my head around the fact that you have autism and the bike somehow calms you down. I find that a fascinating story. Not something I'm sure the designers of e-bikes ever imagined. They saw it as transportation. They saw it as health. They saw it as environmentally friendly, maybe fun, as Don keeps saying, but I don't think of it as therapeutic necessarily, and it sounds like it has been for you.
It doesn't have to be diagnosed as therapeutic. It's just it's
maybe that's
experience.
It. Yeah,
it's just, like, it's, we don't have to label it, but it's important to address how these things make you feel and getting other people out there to try and experience this.
So would you encourage others with autism, as you meet them, as you talk about them, as you advocate for this, get out of the car and get into the environment, maybe with something like an e-bike?
Well, I've done it a few times. I have two individuals that I've gotten off of cars completely, and they do e-bikes, and they are able to work at a job a lot smoother now because they're not being overstimulated going in on that commute.
Wow. Healthier and happier, and maybe having some fun. Maybe I'm trying to break it down too scientifically here. Maybe it just comes down to what Don says, you know, hello, fun. And a little more fun in your life, we'll all have a little healthier, happier existence here on the planet. You just really tapped into something. I'd love to have you come back sometime and talk more about the journey, or bring others. Quite frankly, I didn't think we were going to talk about how bikes have helped people or changed their life. I wasn't expecting somebody with autism to come on the show and talk about it. That's not one I would have connected the two together. But for you, it's worked, and maybe for others as well.
Yeah, it's definitely helped a lot.
Well, thank you for helping me understand this and for helping share this story here. You're in Winston-Salem. Is there a website we can go see your stuff, or we'll give you a plug for any of your abandoned buildings here?
Yes. My website and brand name is Urban Mez. That's urban, like city, urban, and Mez, MurphyEchoZulu.com. And if you go to that, you'll see a general listing of where I've been, what I've done, about me, my documentaries, newspapers, that type of stuff. And I also have an Instagram, which is the same thing.
And I hope there's a picture of your bike up there. Which one have you got?
I have a City Commuter Platinum Edition, the Black Edition. I put about 5,000 miles on it now in the last year.
And that, again, is amazing to me. You're riding around the city. We had somebody on last week. He's ridden so many miles that he started realizing, I could have ridden around the world. And so halfway over, when he turned the bike over twice, he started imagining, I am riding, and he started keeping a daily log and then charting it, plotting it. Where does that put me in the world? I'm in Abu Dhabi. I'm in Pakistan. I'm in someplace now. And then he would research and read like he had really, and it turned into this amazing journey. And he's put over 24,000 miles on his city commuter with this imaginative virtual tour around the world in his mind.
Well, I do tours as well. I've gone over to Alexa at the Winston-Salem Pedego and been like, can I borrow three batteries? And she's like, yeah, let's rent them. And I've gone 200, 240 miles in 10 hours. Just go, I'll camp. I'm working with a guy over at, he does solar over at Soul Mobile. We're working on making solar chargers.
There you go.
For these e-bikes so we can charge them while we're going.
How cool is that? Well, I'd love to have you come back and talk about more of that, because what an adventure. Certainly a story I would not have anticipated not just by what you do and how you do it, but how this bike has worked into your life and brought you comfort and peace in a world that is too loud and too noisy, it sounds like, for you most of the time here.
It's kind of a self-inflicted thing. People look at the phones too dang much.
Isn't that the truth? I got to have it near me all the time. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Ryan, from down in the Winston-Salem area. And go check out his website and follow him. Follow his journey. What an amazing story. Thanks for coming on and sharing here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, there you go, folks. If that's not an amazing twist to this tale, if that's not an amazing part of this journey, I don't know what it is. It seems to be reaching a lot more people than even I could have imagined in a lot more imaginative ways. Right here on the Pedigo Podcast. For more information, go to pedigo.com. Or pedal back and tune in next time as we find more interesting tales from the frontier of the e-bike revolution.